Today we're going to do the 46th. It is, in my opinion, one of the most gorgeous and lyrical that I have been able to encounter. It doesn't say all that much new, and yet the way it says it is so special that it's worth really looking at. Lamnatzeach livnei Korach al alamot shir. And before I go any further, you know that there are series of mizmorim that were attributed to Bnei Korach. They are the descendants of Korach, the Levim. We're not sure when they lived, because we have Bnei Korach, the descendants of Korach, throughout the ages. Many of the mizmorim that they had written seem to come at the end of an era, namely some horrific cataclysmic events. So what events are we looking at? Well, some of the Mefarshim, Rashi, Radak, for example, say that this mizmor is all about something that will happen in Milchemet Gog u'Magog at the end of time. That becomes Ikvata de Meshicha, which is the footsteps of the Mashiach, right before the very, very end. So we hear some of that. Others argue, no, the description of what's going on here might have been the battle around Yerushalayim in the days of Sanherib, when the Assyrians had already conquered the northern tribes and had already exiled 10 tribes, and then went on a major downslaught to what was left of Judea, which frankly was a tiny little kingdom in the days of Hizkiyahu the king. And suddenly plague breaks out among the troops of the Assyrians, and probably bubonic plague, and they run for their lives. They just flee. Many of them are infected. Their bodies are strewn all over the northern part of Israel as they run away towards the north. That is the beginning of the end of the Assyrian Empire. It doesn't take very long before their king is assassinated by his own sons, who are struggling amongst themselves for who's going to take over the kingdom. And remember that this is an incredible kingdom that rules all Mesopotamia and all the way through Egypt. Do you understand? So they have become a very, very important power. They fall apart. They are shortly thereafter overthrown, and Nineveh is burned. Nineveh is the capital, by the Babylonians. The Babylonians were subjected to the reign of the Assyrians, and they rise up against them, and they take over. Whoever has lived here has seen these kinds of things, and as a result is responding to this. Others say, no. This is too many descriptions of cataclysmic events that occur naturally, such as earthquakes. And therefore is describing a major... Now, we know that in the days of Uzziah, there was a major, major earthquake in Israel. You know that Israel lies on a major fault. Mm-hmm. And it's only a matter of time before something of this kind will happen. So it was describing that. Some sort of either earthquake or some other kind of horrific natural disaster, whether it is a volcanic activity that comes from the sea like a tsunami. You'll soon see the descriptions are there. However, we read it, many refer to Kings the Second, and I was going to actually copy this section for you, and I apologize for not doing it, in which there's a description in the second, we're talking about the second book of Kings in the 19th chapter. Vayhi balayla hu vayetze malach Hashem vayach b'machane Ashur 185,000. In middle of the night, an angel of God came out and smit 185,000 soldiers surrounding, besieging Jerusalem. Vayashkimu baboker, and when they woke up in the morning, those that are inside the city looking over, vehinei kulam pgarim metim, and their corpses lying everywhere. And Sanherib, who was the general that led this onslaught, fled for his life and went and settled in Nineveh. And there it describes how Sanherib is murdered by Adar Melech, Veshar Etzer, Hikiu Bacherev, and they themselves escape to Ararat. You know that Ararat is in the area that we know today as Turkey, right, where the mountain is. Okay, and instead, the third son, Asarhaddon, rose up against them. And that's the way the chapter ends. So very briefly gives us these events, and some think that maybe this is what it's referring to. If you look carefully, I laid it out for you, and you will see how beautifully structured this is. In yellow, I highlighted a recurring theme. Hashem Tzvakot Imanu Misgavlanu Elokei Yaakov Sela. Now, you might know these lines. You'll say, wait a minute, I know this. Where do I know it? The reason you know it is that when you say Havdoleh, Hinei El Yeshuati Eftach Velo Efchad Ki Aziv Vezim Ratia Vahili Yeshua, right? Hashem Tzvakot Imanu Misgavlanu Elokei Yaakov Sela. When a Jew leaves Shabbos and is about to enter not only the darkness of the night, but facing the struggles of the week, for one day he managed to somehow forget them, comes the refrain of some very important verses, a collection of verses that form the liturgy of Havdoleh. And one of them is, Hashem Tzvakot Imanu, Hashem, and it used the word Tzvakot, which is usually translated as hosts. I mean, in modern English, host means somebody who, like Linda, takes us into her house and feeds us and gives us things to eat. That's a host, or a hostess. A tzava is an army. It's troops. And so it is a collection of, if you like, soldiers. Are the soldiers human soldiers? Are the soldiers angels? Or are the soldiers in this particular case, forces of nature that God uses as his instruments? Be that as it may, it can be all of that, because we often consider ourselves Tzivot Hashem. We are, if you like, the army of God, okay? Hashem Tzvakot Hashem, who heads this, these troops, he's with us. Misgavlanu. He is a support for us. Misgav is something that you will lean on. Elokei Yaakov Sela. He is the God of Yaakov forever. If you treat the word forever, Sela, as forever, or if the word Sela is nothing but a musical flourish, he is the God of Yaakov. Why would you be repeating yourself, one time calling him Hashem Tzvakot, and one time calling him Elokei Yaakov? For a good reason. His name is Israel. Why were you calling him Yaakov? Yaakov is the name to use for Israel when he's under the heel of Golos, when he's under the heel of other people, when he is down below, as opposed to when he is Sar, when he is a prince of God. So what I have is, God is with us, be he as Midas HaRachamim, and we are his army, or he's with us, even when he's Elokim, when he's judging us, and we are Yaakov under the heel of others. And I've got them both on both sides. So I have both sides of that, and that becomes the refrain. You'll also see that it divides into three stanzas, each of which is four verses long, perfectly symmetrical, you see. So you'll say, how come the first one doesn't have it? It actually does. The very first line, not Seach Livnei Korach, but the next one, Elokim Lanu, God is with us. Machase Ve'oz, he is a shelter and a source of strength. Ezra Betzarot, he is the help during our troubles. Nimtza Me'od, present, very. He's very present. Just when you think he's abandoned you, just when you think he can't see him, and where are you, and where is God now during all of our troubles, he's saying that in the worst of your troubles, he is truly very much there. You have that in another place where it says, Imo anochi betzara, I am with you in your troubles. So somebody will say, where was he in Auschwitz? In the gas chamber, in the crematorium. So the question is, where was he? Ezra b'tzarot nimtza me'ot. in your troubles, the Ribbono Shel'Olam kivyachol himself is being tortured, himself is being harmed, because the war against us is a war against the Ribbono Shel'Olam, because we are Tzivot Hashem. So he says, Elokim lanu machase ve'oz ezra betzarot. So you'll see that that line is very similar to later on the refrain. But in the midst of troubles, you don't necessarily see it as clearly. So it'll only come out late. Al ken, and as a result, lo nira behamir aretz. We shall not fear. Lehamir is to exchange. Was there once a nation that hemir, that exchanged a living God for a golden calf? That's the way the Torah asks us. And the answer is, yeah, there was. We once... Did you ever exchange a living God for merely sticks and stones? And the answer is, sadly, yes. Lehamir. So if you go to in Israel and you want to exchange your dollars for a shekel, you say, ani rotza lehamir. To hamir is to exchange. How was the land exchanged? So some of the Mefarshim say Hamir Aretz means that the land is exchanged from one owner to another, where Palestine becomes the land of
Israel.
Where a kingdom becomes a democracy, where one leader is overthrown and another is put in his place. So it's not Eretz as much as we would think of as a political upheaval. We will not fear a political upheaval. Ubemot harim, and when mountains fall, belev yamim, in the heart of oceans, of seas. Mountains fall? So some of our Mefarshim say, yeah, this is a description of a gigantic volcano. And some of our Mefarshim even argue that there will come a time, as there had been in the past, where rivers that once had flown will become dry, and places that once were dry will become seas. That in fact there will be major events of this kind, and you thought it was climate change. And we know that there are countries that have sunk into the seas. Atlantis. Atlantis is not a myth. They've already managed to find entire areas. The northern part of Egypt is now under the Mediterranean. It's underwater. So they would have seen things of this kind in their lives. Are we talking about natural events, or are we talking about what they think of as apocalyptic events? Things that will occur at the end of days. Yehemu, yechmeru ma'av. The word yehemu comes from either the word and that refers to a noise, like the onrush of the seas. Or it comes from the word hamon, like the onrush of a mad mass of people and the big noise that they make. As if you were hearing from a distance people cheering in a big stadium where you've got thousands and thousands of people hollering at the same time. Hence the word hamon. But because of what follows, my suggestion is that this is very much the sound of rushing waters, where at the same time, yechmeru meimav. Yechmeru chemar is clay, when the waters become clay. Have you ever seen pictures of what happens in a tsunami? Where all the water goes rushing out, and the area that previously had been sea is now completely, you see, sand. But it's not completely dry yet because it's clay-like, you see. And then, of course, you've got that water standing, and then it comes gushing at you. So waters become mud. Yir'ashu harim. Mountains will rash, quake, noise. You're hearing the trembling of the mountains. Bega'avato, in his pride. Who are we talking about? Who's the he? It can't be harim, because harim is plural. It would be bega'avatam. It can't be ma'im, unless it's Eretz, land, unless the land has become so arrogant, unless the land has become so absolutely full of itself, that it worships itself, at that point, what does God do? I'll show you. It'll all come falling down. So many Amirfarshim say that in the same way that you use the word Eretz, you say the country, the United States said, well, the United States can't speak. You mean the people of the United States or the representatives of the country. If you say Poland went to war against someone, Poland doesn't go against, it's the people of Poland. So what I really mean is, I mean the people of the land, in their pride, in their ability to think that nobody can vanquish us, what does God do? He crushes the mountains. The seas that they relied on become dried up, and the places that previously were mountains and dry land, they become covered with water. The world goes topsy-turvy. You see, for those who describe this as the fall of Ashur, then it would have made sense that the Eretz that we're talking about is that great kingdom that thought it could come against us, and instead, it fell. The Ga'ava here is whose Ga'ava? Sancheriv, Ashur. Nobody can vanquish us, and guess what happened? It all fell. If that's the case, the mountains falling are who? Comes Mitzudot and tells us, it is nothing but a mashal, it is nothing but a parable. Mountains are powerful people, the great leaders, the kings, the leaders, they are the mountains, you understand? And so this is what it's describing here. Sfono says, no, we're talking about how one country comes to war against another, not necessarily speaking about any one particular war. So this could have been the fall of Ashur, but it could be World War II, it could be World War I, it could be anything you want it to be, as well as the possibility of a future Armageddon, Gog Magog. Ibn Ezra says, no, our sages told us there will come a time when all portions of dry land will revert to sea, and sections of sea will become dry land, because as you know, underneath us is water. And that's why I wrote myself, global warming, climate change, or is this something that was actually foretold a long time ago? Yeah. And Rashi simply says, it is all a mashal, it is all nothing more than an allegory of wars and revolutions. You see how remarkable this is. But what is the declaration? While they're all fighting with each other, and we might get crushed under the heel during the process, I am declaring that in this thing, Elohim lano, the Rebbeinu Shalom is with us. He's our shelter. He's our strength. He will be the help that we need in times of trouble. And in case you think he's absent, when it looks like it's war between people, when you're thinking of this as trying to give it natural or environmental explanations, let me tell you, who nimtza me'od, he is very, very present. You can't see him, but it is the hidden hand that is making all of this happen. And with that, it ends with the word Selah. So the Ga'avato can be his pride, God's pride. It can be the pride of a king who thinks that he is invincible and now he's brought to heel and crushed. You see? It can be the pride of humanity who lives on land. And they are crushed in the process and come to discover that they really don't have any control at all. It comes the second stanza. Nahar Plagav, a river and its tributaries. What river are we talking about? A river and its tributaries will do what? Yisamchu ir Elokim, will make the city of God rejoice. So some say, oh, this must refer to the Gihon, Some say this refers to the Shiloach. This refers to the river that went out with four tributaries from Gan Eden. That's what we're really talking about. Ah, says Radak, no, we are talking about waters that rise up from rivers and destroy entire cities. What are we talking about? The Euphrates and the Tigris rivers that rose up, and the city that was actually built up between them was Nineveh. Remember, we talked about this being Sanherib. So you have those things that once made it into the Fertile Crescent suddenly rising up and washing away entire cities. And we know that that has actually happened. We have a lot of evidence to that effect, okay? Others say, no, it's coming from Ir Elohim. After all, it says it will make happy the city of God. And what's the city of God? Surely it's Yerushalayim. And that the word here is Kodesh, not Chol, not the city of the gods, like Nineveh was, like Babylon was, but Ir Elohim, meaning our God. It will make them happy. How do I know that? Because it says Kdosh Mishkenei Elyon, the sanctified city in which the one on high chose to dwell. Well, something very interesting occurs as a result. If this is all a parable, just an allegory, and the water is going and dividing this way, coming and making the city of Yerushalayim happy. If that's the case, then the river that comes out of Yerushalayim, where God dwells, is Torah. That was described as water. You know that. Ki mitzion tetze Torah udvar Hashem miYerushalayim. That river, with its tributaries, Torah shebichtav, Torah shebealpeh, I can go on. All of that makes the city happy. And it is because of that that God has chosen to dwell in it. So some say, Stono says, it's a mashal for Torah. And what does it then do? He says, Elohim bikirba. Since God is in her midst, baltimot, she will never fall. Always, a city is always feminine. Ir ve'em. Ye'ezreha Elohim lifnot boker. God will help her. You know when? Just before dawn. Dawn is a light after the big darkness, night of Golf. That great help will happen right before morning. But I read you right now from Melachim, and you heard that come morning they saw that all of the bodies were laying there dead. It happened before morning because during the night they died. So if it's describing what happened with the siege of the Assyrians around Yerushalayim, it makes sense. You understand? And you can see why they had chosen to describe it this way. But if you take the position of Rashi and Radak that this is a prediction of something that will happen in the future, then night is the time of Golus, and Boker is the time of the coming of the Moshiach. God will help the city. Now, why does the city need to be helped that he's in it and he will help her? Because the city will be attacked in the great war against Gog and Magog. Hamugoyim. Many nations will come in their onslaught, if it comes from the word masses, Hamon. Hamu, if it's this cry where they're all battle cry, Hamu Goyim. Matu Mamlechot, there they will fall, the kingdoms will fall. Entire kingdoms, entire political units will be overturned. Natan Bekolo, he has given forth his voice. Who gave forth the voice? Obviously God. And what will happen? Tamug Eretz. And the land will melt. The land will melt. And the word Tamug in this case means they give in. They completely are falling apart. Like so much melted ice. You understand? They can't withstand it all. And why will that happen? Hashem Tzvakot Imanu. For Hashem, who's with our armies, He's with us. Mis Gavlanu, He is our support. Elokei Yaakov Sela, He is the God of Yaakov, even when we are under foot, even when it seems like we are being overrun, even when it doesn't seem like we are superior, He's with us. This is what we call Ikvata de Mashiach. Are we still waiting for Melchemet Gog Magog? Are we in the midst of Melchemet Gog Magog? You see, World War II, in the eyes of God, 1,000 years is like yesterday, fleeing yesterday. If that's the case, then the process that began in the 30s is still unfolding. And that's why they call it Atchalta de Geula, the beginning of the salvation. It is the process that is still beginning. And you know full well that we're still not safe. We're still in the midst. We're still fighting over who it belongs to. You understand? We're right in the middle of the battle. It ain't over yet. My father described to us remarkably when the Nazis were at Alamein, with Rommel near North Africa, approaching Egypt. And all of the shuls and all of the schools and everybody, all the Sifrei Torah were taken out in the old city, and everybody was fasting and they were saying slichas, and then it turned around. And that was the beginning of the downfall. Will it come here too? But it looked like ototot. You need to understand that they were on their way, with the collusion of the Mufti at the time in Jerusalem. So, lechu chazu mifalot Hashem. Go out and see the works of God. And you thought that this was just what? Nature and its upheavals? You thought this was just history repeating itself? Asher sam shamot ba'aretz. This same God who did what? Look at the play on the word. Asher sam shamot ba'aretz. Who placed desolation in the land. Places that previously looked like they were flourishing are doing what? Countries that were so wealthy, suddenly doing what? Look at Venezuela. Mashbit milchamot at k'tzeh ha'aretz. This same God will lay to rest all wars to the edges of the earth. Keshet yeshaber, He will break the bow. V'kitzetz chanit, and He will cut to pieces the spears. Agalot yisof ba'esh, and the wagons, He's talking about chariots, or wagons that carry material to these soldiers in the field, He will burn by fire. This is very reminiscent of the prophecy of Yeshayahu, as they pleat the swords into plowshares. Velo yisa goy el goy cherev, and no nation will lift a sword against the other. Yeah, that's the next stage. Harpu, let go! Let go! Enough already! Ud'u, and know, ki anochi Elohim, that it is I who is God. And not who? Not your battles, not your wars, not your power, not your money, not your armies. No, Anochi Elohim. Because remember that the word Elohim means the powers. Aum Bagoyim, I will rise up over all nations. Aum Ba'aretz, I will rise up over land. In other words, I rule over kingdoms, over political units, hence goyim. And I rule over the earth and its nature. What you think of as powers, forces of nature, right? It's the Ribbono Shel Olam who actually governs it. Hashem Tzvakot Imanu, be it a threat from another country, or be it a threat from an earthquake or a volcano. Hashem Tzvakot Imanu, Mishgavlanu Elokei Yaakov Vela. Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch tells us, see, look and see what happens to kingdoms that are not established on moral law. They can crush and murder millions, but they will not prevail. They ultimately must fall. Who would have thought that the Soviet Union would fall? Mm. And if we sit here and quake about North Korea, absurd. It's absurd. You need to understand they don't stand a chance. For Earth can keep away from water. If you remember from the story of Noah, where the forces of water are always trying to overtake Earth. Why? Because water, while it is the source of life, is also the source of chaos. It is in water that the big eat the little. There is no moral law in the seas. In the seas, there's only the law of survival. Land can survive. The ha'aretz, right? Shamayim, shamayim la'ashem. The ha'aretz natnan lebnei adam. It was given to human beings so long as they could do what? Establish the rule of moral law. If there is no moral law, now, I want you to understand where we're living. Mm-hmm. We're living in an age in which country after country are legalizing euthanasia. Euthanasia is no longer about putting somebody out of their suffering. It's about putting the family out of their suffering so they can get their hands on the inheritance. That's what it's really about. It's about children deciding when their parents are a burden to them, let's get rid of them. It's when people have decided that they have the power over life and death. And we deem that as moral. Those are the discussions that are occurring nowadays. You understand? Where you no longer are allowed to say, ladies and gentlemen.
No. People.
No. Person. Because, God forbid, you see, we no longer are binary. We are something other than binary. So black is not white, and white is not black, and everything is upside down, turvy-turvy. Harim yimotu, hamayim yechrevu. You see, nothing is what it seems to be. So there is actually a complete revolution in which there is no differentiation between good and evil. That's what we're living with. So long as there is Elokim b'kirba, that's what Rabbi Shimshon says, so long as God is in its midst, the city will not be destroyed. But if God is not in its midst, and why would God not be in its midst? Because God cannot be in the presence. People who do not recognize the difference between right and wrong, between good and evil. So what has today become politically correct, at least by a few elites that are trying to take over this country, in taking anything that is sacred and actually throwing it out the window, that is actually going to bring about the downfall. Comes Rabbi Shimshon Lesail Hirsch and says, the purpose of all revolutions in human history, and you think it's about freedom, is actually so that God would reveal himself amongst the human race, as well as revealing himself as he does in nature. But you need to understand that we need to be able to see the presence of God also in the heart of humanity. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be the army that brings that message. We're the Hashem Tzvakot. Mm-hmm. We're Tzvaot. Our purpose is not to bring war to the world. Our purpose is to spread the message that there is a difference between good and evil. Mm-hmm. And that all human beings were created in the image of God.